ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Well, it's springtime, usually a time of lots of bees buzzing around gardens, hey? But since the arrival in 2022 of varroa mite and its rabid spread throughout New South Wales, Victoria, South Australia and into Queensland, gardens are a little on the quieter side. Varroa mite is a devastating bug that gets into bee colonies, and it's destroyed both feral and managed bee colonies and triggered mass euthanisations of bees exceeding some 15 million. In September 2023, authorities shifted from eradication to a two-year transition to management strategy. That's now in effect, which is focusing on pest management, beekeeper training, mandatory hive certifications and health monitoring systems. So for an update on where the bee industry is at, we're joined by the Australian Honeybee Industry Council CEO, Danny Lefevre, to give us an update on how everything is going. Danny, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's good to have you with us. Tell me about how the spread of varroa across Australian states have changed hive numbers. I mean, and colony health since 2022. I mean, how many fewer bees do we have?
Yeah, well, since varroa started moving around the country, it really has changed the way beekeepers manage colonies. Varroa mite, for your listeners that aren't aware, is a small parasitic mite that's smaller than the size of a pinhead that lives on the bees and sucks and feeds on the bees and shortens their lifespan and really reduces their immune system. So left uncontrolled in a hive, it does kill the hive. The bees have no natural defence against varroa, and it needs beekeeper intervention. Since, as you described, the decision was made that it was no longer technically feasible to eradicate, it has been spreading across Australia, so it's now found broadly across New South Wales. It's also in Victoria, Queensland and South Australia as we speak in November. The hive numbers, we have seen some hive losses, particularly in New South Wales, where directly after the response and throughout this response, we lost about 50,000 colonies, which is about 13% of the hives in New South Wales. But since then, with our transition to management program, our education program, beekeepers being proactive about learning and managing, we have seen that stabilise a little bit. So our most recent figures are showing that it's largely stabilised in New South Wales over the last 12 months, but we are seeing impacts of drought, for example, across Victoria and South Australia, impact hive numbers as well.
So since, given that it's here now, is it always going to be here, Danny?
Yeah, so varroa has been around for over 50 years. When it jumped from its original host, which was the Asian honeybee, onto European honeybee, and then was found in the US over 50 years. So it's a pest that will be around forever. It's a pest that a lot of scientists have been looking for a solution, for a control solution, and they have yet to be found. We have techniques, including breeding for varroa tolerance as being a partial solution, and then, of course, using miticides in hives to manage the numbers. But there is no silver bullet to rid the industry of the pest.
And so what has it meant for, bees are essential for pollination, as we know, of all kinds of crops. They're also essential for producing honey. You're saying 13% of all bees disappeared. Has that made an effect on crops like almonds, which rely heavily on beekeepers bringing hives in to pollinate their trees, don't they?
Yeah, look, 13% in New South Wales. It certainly wasn't that high nationally because New South Wales had the mites first. Now, what effect does that have? It does affect our ability to manage our pollination services that we provide. Pre-varroa, we're already pretty stretched as an industry in meeting the demand for crops, like you said, like almonds and apples and avocados and blueberries. There's some 60-odd crops that rely on honeybees. And so as an industry, we've been working on ways of looking to expand and meet that demand. Now you add varroa mite into the mix, it complicates that issue. There's a lot of beekeepers who don't have the means to expand anymore. It puts a huge cost impost on beekeepers who are already struggling. And so we are going to see increased pressure on that supply for pollination services.
Hmm. Yeah. Victoria's lifted its control area order just a couple of months ago, apparently, in September. What impact has that had on the movement of hives?
So when we founded in New South Wales, a natural reaction in our wonderful federated country is that the borders closed very quickly for hive movements. Now, our industry relies on hive movements to be able to move from one source of honey to another, or to move from one pollination job to another. So we need to be able to traverse borders. But when those borders were closed, it created a lot of issues. As we've decided it's no longer, we can't eradicate it, and we've got to learn to live with it, we're doing our best to slow the spread. So still using border controls to slow the spread of the mite across the country, but certainly not preventing movement. Victoria's done a really good job at slowing the spread. We're now 4 or more years down the road from when it was first found, and it's only getting established in Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
But it's at the point now where it is broadly across Victoria, and the balance between the economic impact and the business continuity of closed or regulated borders versus what benefit is further slowing the spread for Victoria is, it's reached that balance where it's no longer required those border restrictions. So the emergency restrictions have now been lifted.
Hmm. Some people say, Australia has bees. It's got native bees. Do they get varroa mite or not? And could they fill the void?
No. So varroa mite have beautifully evolved, if you can say that, to live exclusively on honeybees.
Right.
Originally from Asian honeybees, Apis cerana, now on European honeybees, very specific to that host species.
Mm-hmm.
Some 2,000 or more native Australian bees are largely solitary bees. They don't operate in colonies like European honeybees,
mm-hmm.
Which isn't conducive to mites.
Okay. So, go on.
So we don't know conclusively, but there's no expectations that mites will have any impact on the native bees.
Right. Can native bees fill the void here? I'm not a beekeeper. Explain it for us. Why native bees couldn't be used to replace the work that honeybees do?
Oh, and they can. Maybe not replace, but they can absolutely be used. Of those 2,000 species, like I said, majority are solitary bees, not colonising, so getting the numbers is difficult.
Oh, okay.
A lot of those, there are a few colonising species, Tetragonia, if I can pronounce that right, which is largely found in the warmer areas of Australia, so north of Sydney. And so where we're growing a lot of the highly pollination-dependent crops is south of Sydney and in colder climates where they just don't operate very well. There are other native species that farmers, and we're encouraging farmers to promote those species on their farm.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't ramp the numbers up of those native bees to the levels we need to be able to service our commercial crops. And so at this point, there is no replacement for honeybees to be able to bring in colonies en masse into flowering orchards. But native bees certainly have a role in augmenting and helping honeybees get the job done.
I was going to ask who pollinated before European honeybees arrived, but I suppose then the nature of the flora was very different, wasn't it? Where there weren't these flowering fruit and vegetable species that Europeans brought with them. So pre-Europeans, there was no European honeybee, but also not the same need for this kind of mass pollination.
And we our agricultural or horticultural intensive systems have evolved to the point where we have huge hectares of plantings, monoflora, that all flower at the same time and require en masse pollination in a very short window.
How long does it take to build the bee population back up, Danny? I'm speaking with Danny Lefebvre, who's the CEO of the Australian Honeybee Industry Council. We're just doing a health check on the bee industry since the arrival of varroa mite. How long will it take to get European bee numbers back up to where they once were?
So what we've seen when varroa incursions have occurred in other countries around the world, because we can look, that's the benefit of being so good at keeping it out for so long. We've bought time, and now we can learn from the other countries. So we know in countries like New Zealand, Canada, US, they did lose large amounts of bees in when it first came in, and beekeepers had to adjust, and some didn't. But we also see over time in sort of that 5 to 10 year time frame that those managed colony numbers rebound back to where they were, if not exceeded in some countries. And that's as the recognition of their contribution to pollination increases, and the profitability increases, and the general public support behind buying honey helps to drive that profitability. But at this stage, our beekeepers are really struggling. So the price they're receiving for honey is pretty much at cost of production. There's pollination jobs.
Why is that? Because I presume, I mean, just doing the laws of supply and demand here, Danny, there must be less honey available, so the price should be high, shouldn't it?
The beauty of honey, it can sit on the shelf, right? Yeah. It doesn't go off. So we hold a large amount of inventory nationally in beekeeper sheds and packer sheds. So we did have a pretty good season a couple of years ago, and we're still getting through that oversupply or glut of honey.
Oh, I see.
And that's driven the price downwards. We've seen not necessarily increased volumes of imported honey, but we're certainly seeing cheaper imported honey coming to this country and arriving on retail shelves. And so that is taking a larger proportion of the honey sales than it used to. And we're not exporting anywhere near as much as we used to either, because we struggle to be competitive with some of the more developing countries that produce honey a lot cheaper than us. So we've got a few things against us, and they will limit our expansion or getting our hive numbers back, more so than varroa will. Good beekeepers can manage varroa and get on with the job, and could expand if they could see the profitability there to do so.
That's the trouble with those foreign bees. You see, they work for less. Is that it, Danny?
Yeah, that's right. The foreign bees, yeah, they definitely work for less, and so do the people managing them, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's a beautiful natural product and a perfectly natural industry too, for that matter. So I'm sure everyone's aware of that. Don't buy foreign honey, folks. Just buy Australian honey.
Emphasize that point. You know, what your listeners can do to support our industry and make sure that we do have pollination security into the future, and we'll never have a shortage of food, but the variety that you can see on the shelves could be limited by pollination. And the simple thing you do is make sure when you buy honey from wherever you buy it from, it is 100% Australian honey.
Buy Australian honey. I mean, why would you do anything else? In fact, if you really want to treat yourself, buy some Leatherwood honey from Mole Creek. That's a beautiful honey. Danny, thanks for bringing us up to date. That's great.
All right, thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.